Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Soul Talk. This is Leora Mandel. I'll be joined with Rabbi David Aaron after the break. The day of Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, where we commemorate and remember the destruction of the temples, the first and second temple, the Beit HaMikdash, is this week. And I am personally not looking forward to Tisha B'Av. On the one hand, I think it's not a day anyone looks forward to, and it's not a day we're supposed to necessarily look forward to because it's a day of sadness, a day where we commemorate tragedy. And why would anyone be looking forward to commemorating a tragedy? But when I say I'm not looking forward to it, there's also that aspect of it's a fast day. It's difficult to fast. It's a day where we're not supposed to be engaging in any pleasurable activities. And the main focus is focusing on the tragedies of Jewish history, which is very important to have a day where we are focusing on that. At the same time, it's not something we necessarily would say we're looking forward to having that opportunity. Especially with the fast, it makes it very challenging and difficult. And at the same time, there's a part of me that also, as much as even today we have corona, we have challenges within the nation, within our personal lives. We all have things that if we say, wow, this is a day I'm going to focus on the tragedies of my own personal life, the challenges where life is not where we'd hope it would be because God's goodness and his revelation is not fully revealed in the world and we're suffering from that. There is importance to have a day like that. At the same time, there is a part of me, especially relating to the idea of the loss of the temple. It is hard to relate to it. It's hard to turn on sadness because we're told today you should be sad. And to an extent, I almost feel like if, you know, there's a commemoration of an anniversary of the loss of a loved one, and this was someone you were very close to and very connected to, and you had this personal relationship with, and this is a certain day where this is the anniversary of their death, there is a natural sadness that comes out when we focus and think about the loss of that person in our life. Yet at the same time, if there is, let's say, a great grandparent that I never met in my life, and as much as I may be told how much that grandparent had an effect, such a substantial effect on the entire family and even in my own personal life, and I may have heard stories about it, but I never met the person. I never had a personal relationship. So the sense of mourning and loss is going to be significantly less, I would imagine, than that person I did have that personal relationship with. So the temple, where again, we are told that we are still suffering today from the loss. At the same time, I want to be able to make this day more meaningful. I want to make the sadness and the understanding the tragedy of what that loss is more meaningful. How can I do so? And that is what I'd like to address with the rabbi when we return. How can I make the day of Tisha B'Av a day that is truly meaningful within its sadness, within understanding the tragedy? When we return, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Soul Talk. This is Leora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron. Rabbi Aaron, Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, which is the day we commemorate and remember the destruction of the temple, the Beit HaMikdash, both temples actually, the first and the second, is upon us. And it is a day that I'm not looking forward to, which to a degree is okay because it's not a day we're meant to look forward to. It's remembering a day of tragedy. But we fast in remembering that day. It's a 25-hour fast, and we are really in a mournful state the whole day, which is why I'm not looking forward to it. At the same time, I would like to make it meaningful because it's a difficult day, especially with the fast, especially anything we're supposed to be focusing on, thinking about. It's difficult. It's challenging. And at the same time, there's a reason why we are supposed to be fasting and remembering this day, and it's supposed to be difficult because it's supposed to be reminding us of the pain and the tragedy of the loss of the temple. So what I wanted to ask you today is how can I, and I may not be alone here, make this day more meaningful than just focusing on I'm hungry, there's a fast, and I know it's a day of tragedy, but at the same time, since I personally never experienced the temple, it's hard for me to fully relate to the loss that we are remembering on this day.
Right. So that's a very important question. I would start off by kind of a little bit editing the question and take out the word remembering, because that's part of what's making it not so particularly relevant, is a day to remember. It's really not a day to remember the loss. It's a day to live and feel the loss. Mm. And remembering is a little bit aloof. You know, I'm remembering something that happened. This is not a day that we're remembering something that happened. It's a day that we are acknowledging something that's still happening, because we're taught by our sages that in the generation that the temple has not been destroyed, they destroyed it. In other words, we're still destroying the temple by virtue of us not facilitating the possibility of or making ourselves worthy of it being built. So we're not, this is not about something in the past, although it did happen in the past. But it's continually happening, because as long as it hasn't been rebuilt, then we are part of destroying it.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I already right there is a major perspective change. But I guess it still goes back to that question, is when this is, even though we know that the reality today is very challenging and there's a lot of problems, but it's what we know. And to a degree, it's hard to understand. I mean, as much as there was something we were lacking a lot without having the temple times weren't necessarily a Garden of Eden where everybody lived and everyone was healthy and everyone got along. So it's hard to understand what is the difference today of what we're suffering from not having the temple still compared to what was when it existed.
Good. I want to respond to that, but, and I want you to remember that question, but I want to just go back to, how can I look forward to this day?
Oh, excellent. Yes.
I want to go back to that, because, you know, why would anybody look forward to a day that is sad? I'm supposed to kind of get into a sad state of mind. And what could, let's put it this way, what could be joyous about being sad? You know, is there something that is... what could be positive about being sad? And I remember when my parents passed away, and they passed away 9 months from each other. So it was very, very devastating. And I remember I was crying, and I was in, you know, I was really deeply, deeply pained and sad. But inside me, there was this happiness that I knew how to be sad, and that I was sad over that which was really worth being sad over. And I realized that I've come to realize in my life, and this is what I share with my students, that people think the opposite of depression is happiness. You're depressed because you're not happy. And I believe that you're depressed because you're not sad, and you don't know how to be sad. And I think if people would embrace sadness when it's the right time to embrace sadness, they would protect themselves from being depressed. Because I think one of the reasons people are depressed is because they have a very good reason to be sad, but they're in denial of their sadness, and they keep repressing it until something explodes and breaks, you know, collapses inside, and then they go into depression. And there's something very good, and I've heard it referred to as good grief, you know, that there's something good about the grief, and if there's something healthy. And if a person needs to do, you know, if a person needs to be sad, then they should embrace that sadness and look forward to what they can gain from sadness, because it's all about what's the takeaway, you know, what can I gain from sadness. And a fellow wrote me years ago when my book Endless Light came out, which was my first book, and there's a chapter in there about happiness, and he wrote me an interesting letter, and he wrote me, you know, I don't want to be happy, I want to be whole. I still remember it. And it really helped me understand that, yeah, you know, to be a whole person is a person that is able to experience the spectrum of emotion. And the truth is, if I was never, ever able to really experience sadness, I wouldn't be able to experience happiness. There's no way a person could know the feeling of happiness if they've never experienced sadness. I mean, like, the example I always give is, imagine you're rich and all your friends are rich and all the shows you ever watched on television was about rich people. You wouldn't even know you're rich because you have nothing to contrast it to. And so you can't be happy without being sad, and you can't be sad without being happy. These are two sides of the one coin of an emotion. And so what's there to look forward to being sad is all the happiness I feel in contrast to that sadness. That if I give myself this one day to really be sad, that becomes an essential background to how happy I could be. And that's why it says, our sages say, that those who mourn over the temple will rejoice over its rebuilding. Because I can't be happy about something I was never really, really sad about. Because we feel happy when a lack has been fulfilled. But if I don't really immerse myself in the experience of the lack and the sadness that the lack arouses within me, I don't really have the vessel to receive the blessing and the joy that comes from that blessing when that lack is fulfilled. So, yeah, you know, I mean, it's nature, and I certainly don't look forward to fasting, and especially it's going to be super hot this year. And also because of Corona, in terms of my regular routine of being at the Kotel, it won't be the same. They probably won't even allow that many people down by the Kotel. So, yeah, I mean, so what's there to look forward to a day of not remembering something that should cause me sadness, but really being sad over something really missing in my life, which we'll talk about next. What are we actually missing? But to look forward to sadness. I mean, like, I don't know if I'm unusual, but there's something I enjoy listening sometimes to sad music. It emotes from me tears. And you'd say, like, you know, and a lot of people have written sad music. It's not, you know, there's upbeat, happy jazz kind of music. But then there's music that is actually very sad, and yet it's very beautiful. There's something very beautiful about it, in that it arouses you to something very deep and real. And I feel that there's something beautiful about laughing, and there's something really beautiful about being able to cry.
Such so fundamental what you're talking about, and I think just this point is so essential in terms of exactly that point. There's something I think that, to some degree, just the culture and society we live in, we're so focused on how to be happy, how to make yourself happier, without. And the point is you're bringing out is we have to recognize is that there's also a place of knowing how to be sad, and it's actually a healthy and important part of ourselves we need to develop, especially in real challenges in our lives and real tragedies. Here we have a national tragedy, but also affects us personally, is that if we don't know how to be sad and take time for sadness, then we will not truly know how to be happy. And that's almost like a point that's so skipped because we're so focused on happy all the time that we miss this point of taking time for sadness.
Right. And often people are in the pursuit of happiness because they're running away from sadness rather than, wait a second, acknowledge the sadness. If you have a valid reason to be sad, then grieve, then cry, then talk it out. But don't run away from it. I had a student, and she was really tough. The first day she walked into the class, you just saw something really tough there. And I couldn't figure it out. Something closed and rigid and hard. Something really hard about her. On her face, her facial features were hard. And somewhere in the, you know, our seminar, the Israelite seminar was a 3-week program. And somewhere in the middle of the seminar, she said, "Can I get some private time with you?" I said, "Sure." So we sat and she said, "You know, I want to tell you a story. My father died many years ago when I was 21 years old. And I was so devastated by it, but I decided I'm not going to let it get me down. And so I went to the funeral, and from the funeral, I went to work. And I'm wondering, did I do something wrong there? And I said to her, well, you didn't give yourself the gift of grieving.
Wow, that's powerful to see also how it can have an effect on somebody in such a long-term kind of way. When we return, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy-to-read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Modesty at the beach? It isn't just about body image. It's about feeling good. Modest swimsuits, so we don't get burned by the sun.
So we won't get ogled by strangers.
So we'll feel free to express ourselves without the need to expose ourselves.
Let Marcy Modest help you to cover up what you want, how you want.
Made in Israel.
Visit MarcyModest.com. That's M-A-R-S-E-A Modest.com.
And get a 10% discount on your first purchase.
Two new shows on Israel News Talk Radio.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel? Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Soul Talk. Leora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron. In the context of Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, where we live and feel the tragedy of not having the temple. Rabbi, so powerful, the first segment, where really in life we have to know that there is a time and a place and the importance of knowing how to grieve, knowing how to be sad, not always running away from sadness in the pursuit of happiness, but we can't actually, especially with the story you just shared, we can't actually be happy in life if we don't face true sadness and know how to mourn when we really need to mourn. And that really then brings me to that next question, I believe now, which is, I think this point is so fundamental, and just this is already a foundation of recognizing we have to give time, and within the Jewish calendar, there are days where, especially Tisha B'Av is the day where we do have to face sadness and tragedy and mourning. The question is, again, specifically for Tisha B'Av, when there's something personal to us, if there's somebody that was personally connected to me in my life and they are now no longer here, I feel this void. I feel a lack. But if there's someone who I'm told had such an impact on my life, but I never met them and I never had a personal connection to them, it will be hard for me to mourn, even if they say, oh, today you're supposed to be sad, you know, in recognizing that you have this lack in your life because they're no longer here. But if I don't have that personal connection, it is hard for me to just turn on that sense of mourning and sadness. And we are supposed to do that on Tisha B'Av. So how can we go about that and relate to the loss that we are all experiencing from not having the temple?
Right. That's because we mistakenly think that it's a day that is grieving the destruction of a building. And it's not about the building. There's a midrash in oral tradition where God says to the enemy, you destroyed a building that was already destroyed. Meaning, you just ripped down an outer shell. But what the building actually embodied was gone. And that's why you were able to bring it down, because it really had no, the core and the foundation of the building was already destroyed by the Jewish people. So people mistakenly think, and you know, it says in the Torah, Hashem says, Asuli Mishkan, make for me a tabernacle, which later on was, you know, the later version of the tabernacle was the temple. V'shochanti b'tocham, and I, Hashem, will dwell in them. God does not dwell in a building. He dwells in us. And that building was an external manifestation, an indication of that state of being that we were in, where we were living with a sense of God's presence within ourselves and all others. And imagine if a person lived with that awareness of the presence of God within them. First of all, how would they feel about themselves? And if they were to sense the presence of God in other people, how would they relate to other people? Because bottom line, the foundation of everything is, do you believe you matter, your life matter, and do you believe that others matter? And Judaism is saying that the presence of God, which, what does that mean? We'll get to in a little while, but that the presence of the ultimate, the infinite, the eternal, that which needs no justification for existence, because that's God. God was not caused, and God doesn't need to justify his existence. If the presence of the one who is, you know, is needs no justification and needs no validation, is within me, and I'm a part of Hashem, then how would I feel about myself? And if I knew that about everybody else, how would I feel about them? That's the foundation of the world. That's the core of everything. You know, recently someone reached out to me and told me such terrible, terrible stories about their relationship with their parents. And, you know, and really how hurt they were by their parents. And I always believe that people are hurting people because they themselves are hurting. And that, that's not a justification for terrible behavior, but it's just an understanding of it and an attempt to figure out how to fix it. And how to fix it is to feel good about ourselves. And it's very hard to feel good about ourselves if we think that we're just dust in the wind and that we're just, you know, 1/7 billionth of a speck of dust in the cosmos. And so feeling the presence of God in our lives and in ourselves is this feeling of that in my core, I am of the utmost value, and so are you. And that temple was an external manifestation of that state of being, that state of mind. Once we lost that state of mind, and how did we do that? We spoke about it, I think, last week, the first temple was destroyed because of three cardinal sins, murder, idolatry, and sexual perversion. And these correlate to three damaged relationships. Murder is, I have violated my relationship with others. Idolatry is I violated my relationship with God. And sexual perversion is I've violated my relationship to me that I don't have enough self-respect to seek a genuine loving relationship. And I disrespect myself by engaging in such self-deprecating behavior. And all that comes from this feeling that, is God with us? Is God within us? Do we all share one self? Are we connected to the ultimate? And so when that's gone, then everything's gone. Because what hope is there for a world that doesn't believe in themselves? Doesn't believe that the human being is inherently valuable, and not valuable because I'm some means to an end. God is not a means to an end, and when we experience the presence of God within us, then I'm not a means to an end, and no human being should ever be a means to somebody else's end. And that's called love. You love somebody not because you can use them. You love someone not because you can get something from them. They're not a means. They're an end. And when a person feels that I'm not valuable unless I'm a means to somebody's end, and so I sell myself. I remember there was a student at Israelite who came into my office and started crying. And she was maybe in her mid-20s, late-20s. And I said, why are you crying? And she said, well, you're nice to me. I said, well, why does that make you cry? She says, but you're nice to me for no reason. I've done nothing for you. Why should you be nice to me? I said, why do you have to do something nice to me for me to be nice to you? And so a person sees themselves as a means. If I wasn't a means to your end, then I don't mean anything to you. I'm not valuable to you. And so we look at ourselves as if we're money. Money is not an end. It's called, does he have the means? And we kind of see our lives as the currency of other people that will make us valuable. If I'm a means to somebody else's end, then I'm valuable. Not if you're a human being.
So in a sense, though, when we have a true sense of our core value, that also enables us, God, to be manifest more within us more clearly. Meaning a person who is always in this mindset that I have to be a means to an end, may have difficulty uncovering God within.
Yes, because when a person is truly conscious of the presence of God within us and within everybody else, that presence, which is this one self that we all share together, then they would have such clarity on who they are. They would find the greatest treasure, which is themselves. You just find you, like the real you. That we've all been waiting to find, that I am inherently valuable, and I don't have to be a means to someone's end.
So during the times of the temple, there was a time where God's presence was more clearly manifest, which means we had more clarity on this sense of our own value. And then my question then would be, then how did we lose that? Because if we got to the point of the temple being destroyed because of these core sins, we really lost ourselves. How did we lose ourselves in spite of the fact that there was this time where God's presence was so clearly felt?
Well, how does anything happen? It's an avalanche. It starts with one compromise. Now, it's important to understand that if I'm always in a certain state of mind, then I'll never be in that state of mind. Like, for instance, my bet is that nobody has noticed themselves breathing until I just mention it right now, because we do it all the time. So unless somebody says, hey, we're breathing, we don't notice we're breathing because it's so regular. It's like that clock, that alarm clock we bought, And the first night I can't go to sleep because I hear a ticking, but then I don't hear a ticking anymore. So so life does have fluctuations where it's just like light. Light is actually oscillating between darkness and light, but I'm only noticing the light. It's a flick, you know, there's a frequency and it's flashing. It's oscillating very quickly and I'm noticing the light, but there's actually a darkness. And so, you know, there's darkness and light, but what happens is I get stuck in a dark moment and then I make a compromise and then I start noticing more of the darkness than the light.
When we return, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Soul Talk, Leora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron, talking about living and feeling and having a meaningful experience on Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, where we are immersed in sadness over the loss of the temple, of the Beit HaMikdash, and to be able to relate to this loss so that we can actually experience that sadness that we need to feel. And right before the break, Rabbi, you were bringing out something that is truly fascinating and very true as you bring it out, that we don't notice what is always is. For example, until you point out that we're breathing, we don't think about the fact that we're breathing. And then all of a sudden someone brings it to our attention, you may focus on it more. And such was the case when there was this manifestation of God's presence that was more revealed and brought more goodness and a more of a sense of value, in, you know, human value and an understanding of the human value and purpose into the world that now we truly lack. It is so interesting. And this is, I guess, one of the things that I would say part of what we're doing, as you said earlier, is that if the temple has not been rebuilt, then we are still suffering from the same challenges that brought its destruction. And as you're sharing this with us, I'm realizing that one of the things we need to fix within ourselves is having more awareness of the things that we start losing awareness of, like God's presence, like our human value, all these important fundamental things that are just, again, we get used to and we don't realize how important they are. And we don't want to have to lose something to start to appreciate it.
Right. Well, so the question is, how does one identify whether they're living with the presence of God?
Mm.
So it's kind of similar to the question is, how do I know I'm living with the presence of gravity? Because I feel a force pulling me down. And how do I know I'm living with the presence of God? Because I feel a force pulling me up. When I am an upward mobily person, but upward mobile in terms of an ambition towards moral and spiritual excellence, then this is a person living with the presence of God, even if they say they don't believe in God. Like I can say I don't believe in gravity, but it won't make a difference. I'm still being pulled down. And you can have another person, I don't believe in God, but yet they feel a pull up. That's called God. When you live with a feeling of a pulling up where you're dissatisfied because you have this sense there's a you that you ought to be that you're not and you want to get there. That certainly is not the impact of a person who believes that we're all just an accident. Because accidents don't have ambition to be better accidents, you know? And so if within a person there is this arousal and yearning to grow morally and spiritually and to increase more meaning in my life and spread more value in the world, then you're a very God-conscious person, even if you say you don't believe in God. And I've met people who say they believe in God, but they actually don't live with the presence of God. And then I've met people that say they don't believe in God, but they are literally living an incredible God presence. So, you know, a person who is I watched this documentary on a serial murderer. He was one of the worst of the worst of the worst. I don't even want to say what he did. It was the most horrifying kinds of murder crimes. And so they interviewed him in jail and said, like, why did you do this? And he said, because I didn't believe there's a God. And if there isn't a God, why shouldn't I do this? Why should I value human life? He didn't just simply kill people. He just had zero value for life. And now being in jail for a life sentence, he's come to believe in God. But he acknowledged that I didn't believe there's a God. I believe that we are all evolved monkeys. So why shouldn't I behave like that? And why shouldn't I treat others like that?
So in the times of the temple, though, when God's presence, as we're saying, was more revealed, we could feel it more within ourselves and within the world. On the one hand, you were saying, and it does make sense, that the more something is, even as a reality, like gravity, you're not consciously thinking about it, it just is. At the same time, it almost sounds like having God's presence more revealed would potentially make it more challenging to, sort of like with gravity, even if I'm not consciously thinking about it, I know that I'm not going to bother dropping something and not expect it to break. There is more of that sense of that reality.
Excellent question. You see, it's important to understand that God consciousness is a dynamic process of growth. And the way it works is, the way God is revealed is by revealing and then concealing, and then revealing and then concealing. And the concealing creates the space for stepping up and upgrading the revelation. We actually say that in all our blessings. Whenever we make a blessing, we say, Baruch atah Hashem, blessed are you Hashem, he who has commanded us, or he who created. So is God a you or is God a he? So as soon as I get to a level of feeling God is a you, he suddenly disappears and becomes a he, someone not present. Now that's an opportunity to step up my game and increase my consciousness and choose to become even more God conscious. But that could be a moment where a person goes the other way and gets a little despaired, and maybe very despaired, and they lose it in that moment. Did that make sense?
Yes.
So it's important that we didn't live with a static revelation of God. We were living with a dynamic revelation of God, which is a dance, just like music is a dance between sound and silence. So too, this is the music of revelation, where revelation is a dialectic process, an upward movement from concealment to revelation, to concealment to greater revelation, to concealment to even greater revelation. Otherwise, we would be stagnant in our, you know, just like in love, you know, in a loving relationship, there's a moment where you feel the love between yourself and your spouse. And then there's an eclipse of that, which is an opportunity to choose to up your game. But you might not. And in that opportunity, you might make a choice that increases concealment rather than cashes in on the concealment and ups your level of revelation.
And to a degree, I would say we have, I mean, again, we don't know how revealed God's presence was then versus now, but I would say that that principle still exists, but I guess in a more concealed form of there, I think in our personal lives too. And in the world, we see there's times where there, for someone who recognizes and sees God within history or within our personal lives, we see more of a revelation of God. And then there's times where there is this time, as you're saying, there is more concealment. But how do we get a sense, and just going back to that initial question, is feeling the loss of what we're mourning? Because again, I just keep going in my mind, I hear what you're saying, and I sense some of it today, but it's hard for me to know what was, it's almost like, I guess, like a light bulb. We're used to living with dim light, whereas it sounds like during the times of the Beit HaMikdash, there was potential for much brighter light of really sensing God's presence. But since I never experienced that, it's still hard for me to fully relate to.
Right, but I think you can experience in your own life moments where you had very heightened God consciousness, and how that was manifest in how you felt about yourself and others, and how you treated yourself and others, and times where you were not so inspired, enlightened, and operating at your best version level. That's what we're mourning, that we're not on top of our game, which is the game of choosing good, the game of bringing love, the game of having integrity. That's really what we're missing. And as we mentioned, the second temple was destroyed because of senseless hate. Because if the presence of God was clear to us, there's no way I could hate another person. That'd be as stupid as my right hand hating my left hand when they're all part of one soul, one being. And when I'm truly God conscious, I realize that every human being is part of one being that we all share, and that's what we call God. And if we understood that, then this world wouldn't be filled with gossip and crime and just people hurting each other, and it would be a Beatles song. It would be love, love, love.
Part of what you're making me realize is that part of what we're mourning and the sadness we should feel is that we don't even realize how sad we should be. It's like a person, you may realize that they don't realize how unfortunate their situation in life is, and it could be so much better. And you're almost sad for them that they don't even realize. And that's the state that we're in. We should be sad that we don't even realize. We become so used to what is, we don't even realize what could be.
That's right. I always say that we need to cry over the fact that we're not crying.
And that then really is, already, Rabbi, I really have to thank you, because as I was sharing with you initially, I was not looking forward to Tisha B'Av, which again, it is okay. It's not a day to look forward to, but now I am understanding it actually is a day to look forward to, and the importance of the mindsets that we can be in. And this is really an opportunity. This day is an opportunity to really, again, put ourselves in this mindset. And to some degree, I think because it's not necessarily an extemporaneous sort of sadness of something's happening in my personal life, I'm sad now. It's more of a conscious sadness. We do have to prepare ourselves to get into this mode. But the power of what we can achieve in this mode, and then what we can have after, if we really use this day to its fullest and really put ourselves into the state of experiencing the sadness that we should experience, then the power of the joy and the happiness that we can also have for the potential of building towards trying to help create more of what we are lacking is potentially going to be exponential.
Absolutely.
So I think I really want to thank you, Rabbi, because what you've done here is given an opportunity to recognize, and there's so many times in life, and Rabbi, you do this on a regular basis, of situations that we all may want to run away from, we don't want to face, we see as a challenge and as a problem, really recognizing that it is an opportunity, and that is truly the case with this upcoming day of Tisha B'Av. I want to wish all of us and myself that it should be a very meaningful day of sadness. And that from the sadness will come the ultimate and true joy. I want to thank you all for joining us with the rebuilding of the temple. Amen. So thank you for joining us, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio. Straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.